We're doing our class on the Jewish home. The topic tonight is fluctuation and dedication. Fluctuation and dedication. Building a relationship with our spouse, even though we are dynamic. We go up, we go down, we have times of inspiration, we have times of desperation. We're not always on the same level. And how do we help one another? How do we build together? And where should be our limitations? So our class really began with a question. So we, our class began really with a question of what should one do if their spouse decides to cover their hair less or not at all? And I want us to discuss the topic more broadly, because we all have ups and downs. Let's take the example of the guy who gets married and he is all about keeping Torah and mitzvahs the way he should. And then 5 years into marriage, his wife suddenly notices he's not showing up to minyan on time. And a half a year later, he's not showing up to minyan every day. And a half a year later, he's only showing up to minyan on Shabbos. And a half a year later, he only shows up for the Kiddush after davening on Shabbos. So now, wait a second. She's going to say, honey. What, right. Next thing, you're only showing up for Yom Kippur davening? Wait a second. What type of house are we running? So there are different reactions that are legitimate in different scenarios. One of the challenges in this class is that we can give you a toolbox, but it requires your intelligence to know which tool to use when. Right? It's not, you can't just say the formula is X, Y, or Z. Yeah, the Talmud says that if one sees their wife walking around with their hair uncovered, she is overet al dat yudit. She is transgressing the way a Jewish person, a Jewish woman, should be leading their lives, and those are grounds for divorce. Great, come home and tell your wife that. So the Talmud say that's the way to build a marriage? Talmud says a husband can tell his wife, you burnt the chulin. Forget it. It's over. Yeah, did the Talmud recommend that? Is that what the Talmud's saying? You burnt the toast? Goodbye. Really? You think that's what the Talmud meant? David HaMelech was married to 18 wives. He couldn't take on any more wives. And then his son Avshalom violated some of his wives. And he comes back to the palace. And he falls ill. And the doctors tell him that the only thing he can do to cure himself is to take a virgin girl to be next to his side all the time, and that's what will make him feel capable of functioning in life. A virgin girl has to sit next to him. So long as she's next to him, he will feel fine. So he goes to the rabbis and he says, can I marry her? And they say, no, not so long as you have all 18 wives. You're not allowed to take on a 19th wife. So the rabbis tell him, you can divorce one of the 18. And anyways, you have a bunch of wives who you are prohibited from being intimate with. These are wives who were violated by your son. Technically, as a king, you guys can't live together anymore. David says, I know. So they ask him, so why don't you just divorce one of them? You're not living as husband and wife anyways. You keep funding them. What are you doing? They live in your castle. You fund them. They come and eat meals with you. You treat them nicely. You'll do the same thing, only you'll divorce them and you'll marry this girl and she'll be with you. David HaMelech says, no way. They say, why not? He says, you know what pain this woman will undergo if I divorce her? But technically, you'll lead the same life, right? You will have the same life with this woman as you had beforehand, because right now you can't be intimate, and afterwards you won't be intimate. Right now she's at your home, afterwards she'll be at your home. Right now you're feeding, everything will be the same. One technicality, you'll divorce her, she won't legally be your wife, you'll be able to marry this other girl. David says, no. David understands that even under these circumstances where nothing changes, she won't have to take him to court for alimony, they won't be fighting over the kids, everything will remain status quo, but she will have to undergo the pain of David divorcing her? No way. David says, I'm not doing that to a fellow Jew. Oh, so that's what we learned from David.
Tied to the king and not being able to have a husband.
They didn't want to be free. Anyways, a woman who was married to the king could never marry anyone but a king. Except for a king. Right.
Even if they're violated?
Correct.
So that's it? Their life is screwed?
Look at that. And when someone walks in and chops off their hands and feet and tongue, he also ruined their life, right?
And that guy should be put to death.
Right? Avshalom was put to death.
Yeah, but now
I'm just saying there are physical things a person can do which will maim someone else, and then there are spiritual things that a person can do which will maim someone else. God created a world where we have the capacity sometimes to hurt people. Yes. When a woman drinks alcohol as she's pregnant, she can do something harmful to her baby, right? When a woman takes crack as she's pregnant, she can do things that are harmful to her baby. By the same token, but the baby didn't do anything, right? It's not her fault. But if someone injects her with something, it's not her fault, but it'll harm the baby. Yeah, there are things that can harm a person spiritually. Just like in the physical world, a person can do an act that can hurt someone else. Not their fault, right? But it's still possible. Coming back to our story. So when... Think about it before you decide. Think. You spoke about a deep topic. I gave you a broad answer and a short answer. Think about it. Coming back to David HaMelech. So David HaMelech teaches us that just because the Talmud gives you legal parameters of what your rights are, that doesn't mean that a person is allowed to take advantage of those legal parameters. Legally, I could sue you. You're right, but is it a nice thing to do? Legally, I could divorce you, right? And it could be that after a person does it in Shemayim, they'll take him to task and say, buddy, why'd you hurt her feelings? But legally, I could do it, right? The fact that legally you're allowed to doesn't mean that it's fair or kind to do so. Beyond the legalities, there's a question of being a kind, caring, loving person.
So why even suggest it?
What?
Feeding your kid past the age of 7 right now.
Right.
Why even suggest it?
What do you mean by suggested?
Why even give that as an option?
Why? The Torah doesn't always limit us legally where we are limited ethically. Sometimes it's our job to figure out, hey, it's usher to do it, like David HaMelech said, because it hurts their feelings. But when it comes to feelings, there are many things that the Torah says it's up to you to figure out. I was on a train tonight, and an old man came slowly on the train. So I had a seat that was pretty far from him. And I noticed no one was getting up close to him. And I felt bad because walking from where he was to my seat was not so easy. So I ran to him. I tried to get to him before the train started moving. And I said, sir, you're welcome to have that seat. It's available. Maybe we should walk there. And he preferred to hold on. Then I started looking around and I saw the seats next to him were taken by old people too. Now, technically, halachically, did I have to get up from my seat far away and offer it to him? There are things that the halacha says, figure it out on the spot. Mipnei seva takum, stand up when an old man comes. But should you stand up at that moment? So initially, I thought, no. I said, if I invite him to come my way, the train will start moving, he's going to fall. Then I saw he had no other seat. I said, the train's already moving, now it's his call. I'll offer it to him, it's his call, whether it's safer to stay standing or to come sit down. There are areas where the halacha says, I'm not going to tell you what to do. The halacha teaches me enough that I'm supposed to learn what it means to be a kind, caring person. And then the halacha gives me certain parameters, and within those parameters, I have to learn how to apply it. It's not always yes or no. It's a very tough question. I once had someone who was working to clean in front of our house, and I know he has diabetes. And he comes in and he's thirsty. And we were just celebrating a siyum, there were juices on the table. Do you offer him a juice or not? So you could say it's not nice. He has diabetes, offer him water. But there's juice on the table and everyone else is drinking juice. What's the right thing to do at that moment? Just a second, I'll get you a cup of water. You have to try and figure out the right answer in different scenarios. And in life, it's not always a yes or no. Sometimes it's figuring out the gray areas. So the halacha doesn't limit a person. Part of what the halacha is doing is telling you, build the marriage not because you have to. You have an out. But now don't take advantage of that out. It's part of life is not taking advantage of power. Our assumption is that wherever Torah gives power, it's responsibility. It's not about exploiting power. Wherever Torah gives power, it's responsibility. So if the husband has a greater power in deciding how the budget is divided, then the halacha says that the husband has to know that all things being equal, his wife's needs come first. You were given the power, you think it's so that you do it for yourself? No, so that you help others. That means Shavuos is coming up in 2 days. You have 400 shekel you could spend on a new item. You need a new shirt, your wife needs a new shirt. Your new shirt will cost you 100, 200 shekel. Her new shirt will cost 100, 200 shekel. Okay, you have 400 shekel. You can both get a shirt. What happens if you only have 100 shekel? She gets the new shirt. But we need it equally. But I'm in charge of the budget. Right. The Torah empowered you. That means your responsibility is greater. Empowerment is not about taking care of myself. Empowerment from the Torah is about taking care of others. And this is a recurring theme in Torah. This is a concept that Rav Bar Ilan pointed out to me. Coming back to our story on the home. So yes, one can argue, the Torah tells me and the Talmud tells me that if she walks around with her hair uncovered, those are grounds for divorce. Does that mean you should get divorced? No.
A very common halacha that is thrown out in the home here is about making aliyah.
Oh, that's another good example. So there was a couple that kept emailing me. The husband kept saying, I want to make aliyah and my wife doesn't. And it says in the Mishnah and in the Shulchan Aruch that if a husband wants to make aliyah, the wife should come with him, and if not, it's grounds for divorce, and it's called that she ruined the marriage, and of course she has to come with me. And I kept emailing him back, I know what it says in Mishnah, and I know what it says in Shulchan Aruch, and you're not allowed to break up your marriage, work with her, and eventually you'll come up together. Don't use the Shulchan Aruch as your hammer in order to force your wife to make aliyah. And it's very dangerous, specifically in the realm of halacha, and specifically Chozrim B'Tshuvah, that sometimes a chozer b'tshuva has the tendency to take the world as black and white. This is what it says, this is what we're going to do, finished. And that's why chozer b'tshuva sometimes destroy their kids. Because you can't bring up kids in a world that's black or white. We're not black and white. We have our strengths, we have our weaknesses, and we have times that we fall. And to demand of a kid to be black and white, we're not black and white. Part of our responsibility is to turn a blind eye. And when you demand of a kid, you got to do it. What do you mean? You didn't get up for davening? You know what I say when my kid doesn't get up for davening? Nothing. Nothing. I don't say anything. It's his problem, not mine. I might crack a joke. I might tell him, you want me to wake you tomorrow? When I'm leaving to shul and I see one of the kids in pajamas playing Lego, I'll say, you know, at your age, you should really be going to shul. And then the kid says, okay, I'll get ready. And if the kid doesn't get ready and he sits and plays Lego till Musaf, I ask him if this is the new starting time for shul. Like, we crack a joke. And either he comes earlier next week or not. But it's not a pressure item. And the same thing goes in the home. If you want to build a home of Torah, so the first thing you have to know is you can't pressurize. Right? There was a very, very big, important rabbi. Very big rabbi. I mean, he was so big, he had princes meeting with him. And he had a very important meeting in his home. And his wife knew it. And he shows up for the meeting. And he has an important noble. And they sit down. And his wife says, I'll be there with the food in a minute. And a minute passes. And 5 minutes pass. And 10 minutes pass. And a half hour passes. And an hour passes. And it's almost 2 hours and she shows up with the food. So, on a private moment between them, he asks her gently, he says, beloved. Yes, that's quoted in the story. It happens to be a story in Talmud. It happens to be Hillel, whose wife was so late with the food. And he used a name that showed how much he loved her, BT, which was in their day the way of saying, my beloved. He says, what happened today different with the food? So she says, well, I had everything ready when you guys walked through the front door. And a poor man knocked on the back, and I saw he was in dire need for the food. So I knew you'd be okay with it. I gave him the food, and I started from scratch. I salted new meat, I cooked it, I prepared it, and I brought you everything. So what would we say? We'd say, honey, was he dying? explain this to me. I don't understand. Why couldn't he wait an hour? You know, I had an important guest, right? Put yourself in Hillel's shoes. What would you say? You would say, excuse me? I don't understand. So I'm second fiddle? You don't even know this man? Maybe he's a crook? So you believed his story, and I had to wait out there for 2 hours, right? Think, what would you really say to your wife? We hear the story about Hillel, and we say, wow. Yeah, okay, leave the wow for a second. What would you say? You show up hungry, you told your wife you're coming, there's an important guest, and then she says, sorry, I know you were waiting, I made you new food. So what would you say? Well, why don't you make him the new food? Why do I have to be second fiddle? What does Hillel say? Hillel says, good for you. And the Gemara says, you learn from Hillel how if you want your house to be a Torah observant house, you better be patient. You better be patient. You understand what patient means? Patient means you tell your wife, I'm coming with guests. You show up for the meal. And it's not that the food's not ready. It was ready, and she thought it was a bigger mitzvah to give to someone else. And you say, good for you. Yeah, can you do that? And the Talmud doesn't tell us whether his wife was right or wrong. Because that's not the point. The point is to teach us how you want to keep an observant home. You better be patient. You better be nice. You better be accepting because she thought it was a bigger mitzvah to give the poor man the food. And the Talmud sounds like she was right. It sounds like she was right. In those days, a poor man might die of hunger if you postpone it by an hour. But I would have said, why don't you give him bread? You have to give him all the meal you prepared them. I mean, you couldn't give him something else? And the answer is obviously not. Or obviously that's not the point. The point is, if Hillel wanted his house to be a tzedakah house, then he had to have patience for tzedakah. Men want their wife to go to a shir. But when she goes to a shir and they come home and the house is a mess, they go, wait a second, isn't your responsibility to keep the house in order? And she goes, didn't you want me to go to a shir? Okay, I won't go to the shir next week. And then the husband says, a shir has to be at the expense of keeping the house in order. And then he ends up with a wife who's not covering her hair, right? Because he never had the patience for her to develop her spiritual growth. It doesn't usually happen overnight that a woman takes off her head covering. It's an evolvement. I'm just saying, when the question's asked, we have to see the question in a broader sense. There's a patience that we have to have. We have to be accepting and patient. And even if we disagree with things that our spouse does, we have to be patient. Things happen over time. And you'll tell me, but she's doing things that are prohibited. And I'll tell you, yeah. You know, Rav Yosef noticed that his wife was lighting candles, but it was like Shabbos. It was pretty late. So what would we do? We would come and say, Shabbos! Right? What would we do? You know, if you noticed your wife was lighting late, what would you say? Honey, I have news for you. All the food that you made is not as important as not lighting those candles late. Right? Wouldn't we say that? You know, lighting those candles late, if there were witnesses here, you could get stoned to death for what you just did. Isn't that what we would say? Ask yourself, how would you get your point across? You'd say, all this meal, well, it's nice. But lighting candles late, that's the death penalty. So next week, do me a favor. The candles don't get lit so late. And if you need me to do it, I'll do it. Is that what Rav Yosef said? No. Rav Yosef comes in, and he says to his wife, honey, I want you to know, you remember the Jews? They're traveling in the desert, and they had a pillar of fire. And they had a pillar of cloud leading them. And at night, the pillar of fire would appear so that they wouldn't have darkness. Well, you know what? That pillar of fire would always show up before nighttime, before it became dark. Before the pillar of cloud disappeared, they'd already have the fire. So that they didn't even have those moments where the clouds were disappearing and then the fire would come. No, the fire appeared right away. You know, when you light candles for Shabbos, you're the pillar of fire for the whole house. You're making a light for the whole house. So could you just remember that you're supposed to be like the pillar of fire to show up before the sun sets, before it's nighttime? There's supposed to be candles lit. What does the Talmud tell us? Next week, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, she's preparing candles all over the house. It's not yet anywhere near the nighttime, and she's lighting those candles. So it worked, right? So he comes back and he says, remember that pillar? Didn't show up that early. You know, we're not Yotzei. If you light them in the middle of the day, we're not yet Yotzei. But you see, he saw his wife. And she was doing it pretty late. And what would we say? And what did he say? So the Talmud's teaching us how you get somewhere in life. So, again, could a husband walk into court and say, I've had it. This is ridiculous. I thought I married a girl that went to a good Jewish education. She grew up in a good Jewish home. But she thinks she can light candles on Shabbos. So leave me alone. I can get divorced. For burning my toast, I can get divorced. Certainly I can get divorced over lighting candles on Shabbos. Come on. I'm in the right. No, you're not. No, you're not. There's another scary story in Talmud. Talmud tells us that there are two approaches to keeping kosher in the house. There's one approach that says, I'm warning you, I will never see non-kosher meat in this house. The last thing you do is bring me a heksher that's less than badatz. And if you do, there's nothing to talk about. I'm not touching the chulent that week. Talmud says, if you do that, you should know that if your wife comes to the store and there isn't badatz meat, she will bring you pork, but she will put it in a different wrapping, and that's what you're going to eat. So you'll say, but I married a good girl who went to the best Upina, the best Beis Yaakov, the best I don't know what. She learned by the best rabbis. Rabbi Gun was a rabbi. Talmud says, doesn't work that way. If you pressure a person, that's the best way to ensure they transgress Torah. It says, what will happen if your wife sees that she didn't light Shabbos candles and you're going to come home from shul? She will light Shabbos candles. You'll tell me, but it's Shabbos. Shouldn't she fear heaven? The Talmud says, yeah. But even so, if you're a very pressured religious guy, then she will feel that pressure to the point where she'll find all kinds of excuses. I see shadows. Must be the sun still out. So it's not yet nighttime. It's not yet Shkia. Let's light those candles. She'll find excuses, but at the end of the day, she'll light candles on Shabbos. So the Talmud says the surefire way to ensure that you have transgression of Shabbos in your home is to pressure about Shabbos. It says if you want a home where your wife will say, oh my gosh, I missed it. It's Shkia. I shouldn't light now. It's after Shkia. The only way you're going to get that is if she knows that when you come through the front door and you see the Shabbos candles aren't lit, you won't give her the feeling you're disappointed in her. But wait a second, I want a religious home. Right. The only way you'll have a religious home is if she can be comfortable even when she made a mistake. And if she can't, then she'll make a bigger mistake to cover up for her small mistake, like lighting candles on Shabbos. That's Gemara. That's Gemara. The Gemara says you want an observant home. The only way you can get there is if people feel comfortable making mistakes. So that's going back to the question, how am I supposed to react if a person sees their spouse is transgressing something? Don't say anything. We once had, I can tell you many stories where people in my family asked me, why didn't you tell me I wasn't allowed to do that? And I said, you didn't ask. And they said, but you saw me doing it. And I said, so? You're not always supposed to react. We had a student who did gear by us. And he'd come to my house every Shabbos morning to learn. He'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, go to an early minyan. This was when I lived in the neighborhood. He and I would daven early, and whoever wanted to join from the guys here would come also Shabbos morning. We'd both daven early, and theoretically this was a class for all the guys in the English department, whoever wanted to get up early Shabbos morning. Practically, he was the steady. Other guys sometimes showed, sometimes less. We had a chavrusa. 8 o'clock in the morning, Shabbos morning, he'd come to my house, we'd make kiddush, we'd have ragalach, and we'd sit and learn for 2.5 hours with the kids playing around, a little bit dealing with kids, a little bit learning. We'd have 2.5 hours learning before the meal. And every Shabbos, he'd make himself tea. And every Shabbos, when he'd make himself tea, he'd finish with the tea bag, wrap around the tea bag with a string, squeeze out the tea bag into his tea, and put away the tea bag. And I never said anything. So one time, he's in class, and we get up to the halacha that you're not supposed to squeeze things out, and that this could be sochet, it could be borer, different things. And I say it in class. And he comes to me after class and he says, I've been doing that for an awful long time. Okay. But the halacha says in Hilchos Giyur that no one can grow with someone breathing down their back. The halacha says in Hilchos Gir, don't look over a ger's shoulder. Don't go telling him, you know, you should do that differently. A ger has to learn, but a ger can't feel like he's constantly being rebuked. A person can learn slowly at their pace. The same tzaddik was getting up every morning for Vasikin, getting up an hour before Vasikin, running. He'd jog because he was an ex-soldier, so he'd run around, like run, climb like 150 stairs, climb back down, take a shower, come to Vasikin after he's done his whole workout. And one morning, he's standing in the shower and shaving. But he didn't know you're not supposed to shave with a razor. So he's standing there in the shower shaving. And another guy walks in and he looks at him with the razor. And the guy looks at him and says, "You fake! You fake! You filthy fake!" Standing there looking at him like, "What did I do?" She says, "You're despicable." She says, "Did I take your shower? What do you want from me?" And the guy is yelling at him and he doesn't know what he wants from his life. So he was keeping mitzvos. He never learned. You're not allowed to shave with a razor. And this other guy decided he's allowed to judge him. And he's standing there yelling at him that he's a fake. He's not a fake. He shows up to class that morning and he tells me, that afternoon, he says, "Rabbi, is it true you're not allowed to shave with a razor?" I said, "If you're Jewish, well, yeah, I'll have to." He says, "Really? You sure?" I said, "Yeah. Could you show it to me inside?" I showed him the pasuk. He says, Okay. He said, "Where do you buy a good shaver? Where do you buy a kosher shaver?" He said, "Come, we'll go see where you can buy a kosher shaver." Okay, so he learned. Did he do anything wrong? So in the book, it says it's prohibited, but a ger can't know everything the day he's doing conversion. You're not allowed to look over his shoulder and tell him that's wrong, and that's wrong, and that's wrong. It says it in the laws of gir. Don't look over his shoulder. Ein middakdekinimo. It says it in halacha, in Shulchan Aruch. Don't sit there and look at everything they do. We can all learn at our pace. None of us can learn when someone's breathing over our shoulder. So within a home, it's not like we don't have ups and downs. Us as men will have downs. We'll have times where things are not the way we want them to be. We know it in ourselves. Part of our role as spouses is to be supportive. Part of our role as spouses is to think together. Part of our role as spouses is sometimes to give encouragement. If Rav Yosef knew the way to tell his wife the importance of her candle lighting, so then it gave her the encouragement and the ability to do it. We all need encouragement. I encourage each of you to find time with the rabbi you feel comfortable with, who's with you enough hours, and ask him once a month, "How am I doing?" We had a student here who was a genius. And today's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he was here towards the end of his first year. And I asked him, "What are you doing next year?" And he says to me, "I think I'm going back to college." I said, "Why don't you spend a little bit more time learning Torah?" And he says to me, "I guess after I finish college, I'll think about coming back." And I said, "It's your life and you'll do what you think is right. But I just want to tell you that you are one of the most talented students that ever walked through the doors of Machon Meir. This is a guy who came here not knowing Aleph Beis. And every 2 months he went up a class. Like he'd literally, other people would spend a year at each stage or 6 months at each stage. Every 2 months he moved up. To the point where by the end of the year he had accomplished what it takes other people 4 or 5 years to finish." I said to him, "If you would invest another year, you should just realize your potential. It's your decision." Today, the guy probably finished half of Shas. The guy's a huge Talmud Chacham. But the turning point was a conversation where I said to him, "Just realize you have talent. Realize that you have tremendous potential and it's your choice." We have to hear that. We all need encouragement. If we see our spouse is maybe growing weak somewhere, before we point a finger at our spouse and say, "Why are you doing that?" Maybe we should point a finger at ourselves and say, "Maybe I haven't given them enough strength. Maybe I haven't given them enough positive feedback. Maybe I haven't found the way to give them spiritual growth." So the question about what do I do when my spouse is on a downturn is much more the question of how do I help them get out of it. The question shouldn't be, at what point do I say, "That's it, we're finished. We have a couple here in Kiryat Moshe where the husband doesn't keep Shabbat. The husband is non-observant. And the wife is fully observant. And their daughters are fully observant. And they have the most beautiful home. And the reason is because they can respect one another. For a person to say, because my spouse is A or B or C, I can't live with them. If one thinks that their spouse is cheating on them, then they got a problem. But short of that, if one thinks their wife is being having affairs, then they got a problem. But if it's other issues, almost every other issue, we say, let's find a way to work. Let's find a way to grow together. Let's find a way to strengthen ourselves. Let's make sure we have good friends. One of the things people have to ensure they have is good neighbors, a good neighborhood, that your wife gets in with a good crowd. You send your kids to a good crowd because your kids will very often affect who your wife ends up talking to. You yourself daven in a shul where people are pulling you up. If you're in a shul where they're talking in between aliyahs, it's a bad thing. If what they're talking about in between aliyahs is the basketball game or the news, it's a bad thing. Try to go to a shul where they talk divrei Torah after davening, where people learn after davening, where people are talking about the chavrusas they set up. You know, came to Kochav Yaakov, Baruch Shem Kochav Yaakov. Almost everyone in that shul tries to have a chavrusa during the week. People are working to grow. I believe that it's an amazing community, not because it's the most learned community, but because people want to grow. Because that's where people are trying to get to. That's where people are striving for. And that's why I think it's an amazing community to be in. When you choose a community, you want to choose a place that will help you grow, where people's focus and aspirations are in that direction. If people's focus and aspirations are, let me get a fancier car than the neighbor. Let me make sure I go on a more worthwhile vacation than the neighbor. I better show everyone that I'm wealthy because I got the newest watch and the newest wristband and who knows what else. You got to think 10 times whether you have what to gain by being there or how much you have to lose by being there. It's not a question of what you can afford. It's a question of how you and your family are impacted by the community you're in. At the end of the day, we become our children's education. This is an amazing line that Mr. Phil Goodman once said to me. We become our children's education. Where you send your kids is what you and your family will become. So, yes, we all have ups and downs. I think our responsibility in a marriage is to be accepting and to think how to help one another grow. I think it's rare and almost non-existent that the correct response is, that's it, we're done. If a woman wants to remove her head covering, it's not a right thing. Let's think how to help her. If a woman wants to walk around without a head covering, it's incorrect, but let's think how to help her. There were big rabbis whose wives walked without head coverings, and they didn't divorce them. There's a famous story about one famous Rav in New York whose wife didn't cover her hair, and they used to ask him, does a woman have to cover her hair? He'd say, yes. And they'd say, well, why doesn't your wife? And he'd say, ask her. But he didn't divorce her. He built the house with her. So he did, his students asked him, halachically, do you have to cover your hair? And the answer is yes. The fact that his wife didn't, okay, it was a problem that didn't make it right. So in life, we have to work with one another. We have to work on building things together. And if we give one another space, yet at the same time support, and we talk about where we want to get to, and we try to help one another refocus, and we try to understand why we're weakened in a certain area. Sometimes there's no weakness. Sometimes a guy doesn't get up for davening and every day he feels bad about it. And he's trying to figure out himself how to get there. It's not that he doesn't care. So he's not sure how to do it. So maybe if his wife is smart, she'll help him. And sometimes it means we have to sacrifice ourselves. Very often we think he should change. She should change. Maybe I should change. You want your wife to diet, but you want to bring home all the ice cream in the world. You want her to diet. Join her. Try eating healthy meals together with her. Remove all the sugar from the house and let's see. You'll diet, she'll diet, maybe you'll both get ahead. No. I have self-control. I eat only one piece of chocolate. She eats every pack that's in the house. So why should I suffer? It's not suffering. You want to build together. There are, again, many solutions. And in every case, we have to explore and try to find them. But I think the key is the approach, David the Melech's approach. I have a halachic parameter. That's not the point. I have my spouse's feelings. Let me find how I can work within that, how I can build within that, how I can help them, how I can be there for them, and together grow. And it is legitimate. It is part of who we are as human beings. We will have ups. we will have downs, we will have years, not just moments of weakness. It's part of who we are. Even though we strive to grow, we have to be accepting of the fact that people have weaknesses. What's the best antidote to that? Number one, have date night. Make sure you have real quality time together. Number two, take time to talk values. Number three, take time to talk about education. Number four, take time to talk. Your wife should know that when she needs someone to talk to, you're available. If you don't have patience because what she talks about bores the heck out of you, or it doesn't interest you, or you're just not interested, you're not going to be able to help her. And number five, make sure your Shabbos table is happy and with content. If you don't show up to the Shabbos table with content, and your Torah is an empty Torah where you're regurgitating the same ideas you heard over and over again, you don't keep renewing what you know, and you don't make Torah exciting, you don't make Shabbos and the Parsha exciting, and you don't bring an exciting Torah to your life, so then your wife is going to have a hard time growing. Part of our jobs as husbands is to bring to the table, bring exciting, interesting, thought-invoking Divrei Torah so that there's growth. Torah is exciting. You know, there are Shabbatot where I'm an actor. I wonder if anyone's standing out the window listening. But I put on a whole play for my kids with the Midrashim that I know they don't know about the Parsha. So that's exciting. It's interesting. You know, we're going to reach Parshas Pinchas soon. So if Parshas Pinchas is the same Pinchas you read last year, it's one thing. But if Parshas Pinchas begins with the story of the Garden of Eden and the staff that was in the Garden of Eden and what was engraved in the staff and how that staff traveled from the Garden of Eden through Adam, through his children, through Noah, through down to Egypt, down to Yisro's garden, and then Moshe Rabbeinu taking it out and the story of the staff and Pharaoh, and then that staff is in Moshe's hand when Pinchas sees what's happening with Zimri and Pinchas runs to Moshe and he's the first person to take that staff out of Moshe's hand and he says, Moshe Rebbe, should I go deal with them? And Moshe says, yeah. And he says, give me your sword, and he grabs Moshe's staff and then he runs. Now you've made it into an exciting story. Last year we told the story from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. This year we'll tell the story from the Medrash and Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Every year we can tell a different story about what happened with Pinchas. Different Midrashim. It's a different exciting story. But that's up to us. We have to enrich the Shabbos table. And then Shabbos becomes meaningful. And we can connect our families to the Torah. Tov. So I hope I've answered your question to some degree.